insider's perspective.
Maybe a little more on the insider's perspective in a moment, but so what does Ed Koch have to do with any of that? Right? Everyone noticed Ed Koch on the cover of the handout. So I have to say, the reason I chose to put Ed Koch here is really twofold. One that's relevant and one that's not relevant, but I'll mention anyway, is I really liked Ed Koch, and one of the reasons I liked him was, you know, he certainly wasn't an observant Jew, but he was a proud Jew. And probably that's the first yisod, if we're going to talk about the responsibilities of a Rebbe, which is really what my focus is going to be. My focus is going to attempt to be on exactly the perspective I've gained through my experiences on exactly what the role of a Rebbe should be. But one thing is to really cultivate this idea that we should be proud of being Jewish altogether. And I think Ed Koch actually stands out in that regard. I just showed you, he put on his, although he was buried in a non-Jewish cemetery, unfortunately. But nevertheless, what struck me was what he put on his tombstone, just when I was thinking very ill of him, I have to admit. What's he doing getting buried in a non-Jewish cemetery? It's such a horrible thing. He puts on, you know, quoting from Daniel Pearl, "My father is Jewish, my mother is Jewish, I am Jewish." I thought that was something that really spoke of who he was as a very proud Jew. He was constantly never hiding that. No matter how much he was involved in general society, that was something. But that really has nothing to do with what I want to talk about. What I really want to talk about is what Ed Koch was most famous for. And if you asked anybody whether they liked him or not, his most famous thing was this question: how am I doing? And if you look at the second page, it's just an example, but I'm really going to be just using the handout as a springboard and come off it. But whether people liked him or not, everybody respected the fact that he constantly, sincerely asked, "How am I doing?" Why? Because that represents something that is probably a perfect starting point for our discussion. That is, if you're going to take upon yourself a position of achrayus over other people, a position where you're going to be inspiring or influencing other people, and hold yourself up in that role, then probably you need to be asking yourself this question all the time, and you need to be asking your constituency, talmidim, parents, this question all the time. So how am I doing? So I decided that I'll take my own advice and Ed Koch's advice and Chazal's advice, actually. One thing I always emphasize with guys is no matter how much chokhmah bagoyim tamin, no matter how important that is, which it is, very important, seems most of the time Chazal beat them to it. So this is no exception. Chazal has very, very interesting Gemara in Bava Basra, where it describes a situation where Yoav had gone out and went to battle with Edom, right? Sin Malachim Aleph and Perkid Aleph. And he had wiped out all the males. He successfully wiped out all the males. So that's a little bit of a problem because he was supposed to wipe out all the Edom is Amalek, and he's supposed to wipe out all of Amalek, but he only knocked out the males. So David says, you know, what's going on with that? My high, what happened? So he says, well, it says, Timcha es Zachar Amalek, as the Pasuk says. So David says, you know, I guess he was being polite. He says, well, the version I always remember is Timcha Zecher Amalek. What's with the Zachar? So Yoav was taken aback. He said, oh my God. Wait a second. Let me go to my Rebbe. So he goes to his Rebbe. The Gemara describes on the bottom of page 2. And he goes to his Rebbe and he says, hey, when you taught us this line in Chumash, what exactly did you teach us? So his Rebbe said, Timcha, and the Gemara says, Zayin Chaf Resh. What exactly, how do you read it? So it's a machlokas, Mishonim Achronim, exactly how to read that line. Was it with the segol, zecher, or zachar? Which one did he teach? So Pashut Pshat for a lot of the Mefarshim is he taught him wrong. He taught him zachar. Because the next line is very striking in the Gemara. After whatever this line is, the next line, Yoav takes out his sword. And some say he killed him, and some say he didn't. Well, either way, either he was really chayv misa for this egregious error, or it looked like he was should have been chayav misa. Whatever the striking point is, what exactly was his mistake? So you can understand if he taught him the wrong thing, so maybe he deserves to be killed. Maybe. Right? But the Rashba emphasizes, no, it's segol. He taught him exactly the right thing. He asked him what it was. He knew. Timcha Zecher Amalek. So what's wrong with that? So what the Rashba explains is because the job of a Rebbe doesn't end with being a brilliant Talmud Chacham, doesn't end with knowing everything and even imparting it out there. Your achrayus is to make sure your message got across. And if you don't go to the trouble of making sure that what you're supposed to be doing, you're actually doing, then chayav misa, kivyachal chayav misa. It's a very, very stark message from Chazal. So in the spirit of that, I want to ask that question. How are we doing? I'm going to talk about the collective Rebbe. Obviously, I'm not going to talk about myself. Rebbeim in Eretz Yisrael. That's where I'm holding right now. How are we doing? So what's the first question before you can decide how we're doing? The first question is, well, what are we supposed to be doing? What exactly is the constituency looking for? What are the Talmidim and the parents looking to gain from their experience in Eretz Yisrael, particularly from a Rebbe, the relationship with the Rebbe? So this, I've really, Baruch Hashem, I've gotten an education on this. Because now that I've been involved in interviewing guys and speaking to parents about what they're looking for. So what do you want? The first question you ask, right, at an interview is really, so what are you looking to get out of Eretz Yisrael? So obviously these variable answers given, and you know, different, depending on where exactly the Talmud is holding in terms of his advancement, there's little nuanced differences, but there's a basic, very common answer I get. Talmidim are looking for three things. They're looking for, number one, wherever their skill level is, they want to be well beyond it. They want to be accelerated in their skills. So if they're in the beginning level, they want to be brought up to being able to be able to learn pshat in a Gemara, be able to learn without art scroll, be able to learn Gemara. That's one level. Others that are more advanced, they want to be able to have a more sophisticated ian, to be able to really understand the sugya and get to the bottom of a sugya, get underneath the sugya. Whatever it is, they want advanced in skills. The second thing that most Talmidim are looking for is they want, especially if they felt previously a certain deficiency in their commitment to Shmir Sam Mitzvos, in particular Tefillah. Tefillah is a very weak area for many of us out there. They want to be strengthened in that. They want to have a stronger commitment, something that can carry them, even if they Chas V'Shalom go to an Ivy League school or whatever it's going to be, right? Sort of tongue-in-cheek, really, anyone. They want to be strengthened so that they're able to handle the world as strong, committed Jews. This is very commendable. Very strong commitment to mitzvahs and commitment to tefillah. And the third thing they want is many of them have very appropriate, interesting, important, hashkafic questions. They have many challenges. The modern Talmud, I'll call it, use that expression, is faced with tremendous challenges to their hashkafa. Unbelievable challenges all the time. I dedicate every day, every week, an entire 45 minutes to Q&A because I know what's out there. There's so many challenges. And they want help with that. So those are the three things most Talmidim say. What about the parents? So the parents, again, depending on where the starting point of their children and their own views, so a lot of them also are looking for similar overlap with what those Talmidim said. But they add one thing that I haven't said yet. What haven't I said yet? That you would think would be a concern. Make me a better person. Simple, right? It sounds so simple. Make me a better person. What does that mean? It means make me a mensch. Make me someone who's got excellent character traits. Somebody who's honest. Somebody who's a baal chesed. Make me that. Make my child that. Mature him. Give him dignity. Make him into a perfect ben Torah in the fullest sense of the word. So that's very important. And I get that from Baruch Hashem. I love to hear that from parents because it shows that they're connected to what they should be, in my opinion. So, now those are the goals. Improve learning, commitment to mitzvahs, hashkafic issues, and better people. How are we doing? Anyone want to just throw out an opinion? We have time for one. Anybody? All right. I'll tell you the truth. It doesn't really matter what you say. And here's the reason. One of the things I got out of being in the world of medicine is I learned very quickly anecdotal evidence means nothing, right? We can't draw conclusions. No matter what you think or I think, it doesn't really matter. What counts is data, right? It's, in other words, I need almost statistical analysis on this question. And I remember when I was thinking through this, how are we doing? Regabe these things. And I started to think in that analytical mode. I said, how on earth am I going to get data on such a question. And lo and behold, hit the right Google. Several people did, and I'll start with this one, the one I'm going to focus on the most, which is the most elaborate, with the best data. It was done, the only chisaron of this, it was done in 1997, this study. I think there's a little has changed, which I will point out from what he found, but it's a remarkable study. It was done by somebody, I won't mention his name, because I'm going to be a little critical of it. And it was a great study. I'll start with that. He did. I thought he asked the right questions. Anyone who's interested, I have the actual questionnaire that he used. Maybe he can pass it around. His objective was to see how are we doing, how are the yeshivas doing. So he took 450 talmidim, and he asked them a whole bunch of questions that related to every parameter that we just mentioned a few minutes ago. How were they before their experience in Israel, and how were they after? A pre and a post. It's unbelievable data. It's like, how were you in terms of your commitment to different mitzvahs? Did you wash in the morning? Do you make brachos? Do you bench? Do you daven? Do you fast on fast days? Marna fast days? Asar b'tevas? It was like very clever, right? They knew what to ask. On the things that might be shifted to the side, they asked those questions, and they had a hierarchy. It was very, very nicely done. They asked on commitment to learning. Do you have a chavrusa? Do you go to shiurim? Right? And then they even asked on the ethical issues. Are you honest? Would you cheat on a test? Would you cheat on your taxes? Would you get up for an old person? Would you do chesed? Would you get involved in chesed? Those were the questions. It's remarkable. So what's really amazing is the outcome. So this I want you to definitely look at. Go to page 3. The impact is greatest if you take a look at these results in the flesh. So first, let's look, how did the yeshivas do, and I'll get into the personal Rebbe element in a moment, how did the yeshivas do with ritual practice? Ritual practice were those things like benching and davening and fasting and all those type of tzitzis, tefillin, right? Very nice. Pre-test on the left, post-test, look at the shift. The low, middle, and high are the frequencies by which these activities were done by the participants in the study. So they shifted from really most in the middle to low to most to high. That's a very good result, right? Baruch Hashem. Then you look at the personal tznius. Tznius was another area they looked at. How do you dress? How do you act? Megia, the tzachlus, all these very important areas, right? How did we do with that? Great. Again, shifted up. Everybody's improving. Then they looked at Torah study, which was, are you having chavrusas? Are you going to shiurim? How are you doing with that? So again, great. Now, when was this done? So it was done prior to their start and right after they finished. Is that valid data? Many people would say, nah, come on, look at them like a little later, right after. I hate to quote my son while he's in this room, but he has a great line for this. He says, you got to wait till after detox. Now, I don't really like that expression. But nevertheless, it does kind of get the point across very nicely. What about a year later? So if you look at the next page, there you go. We're still doing good. This is a year later. The data holds up. And not only that, it looks like it's dose-dependent. Because anyone who's shana bet does even better. Right? That's the middle row, right? They went 72%. That's up from the 60s. And in these areas of shmiras mitzvos and snios and learning, unbelievable, right? And then, the shocker. To me, I was absolutely not expecting this. Turn the page. What about on the ethical issues? What about on the type of people they are? What about whether they are Bali Chesed? What about whether they're honest? Oh my God, look at it. No significant change. And these are people admitting it to themselves. That's what's also remarkable about it. These are the students who recognize in themselves. No change. And if you turn to page 6, it really captures it. They separated it. Ben Adam L'Makom, Kavana, Torah study. Again, wonderful. Ben Adam L'Chavera. Not so hot. What's going on? So now, the author of the study here, so far looking good. I'm saying, wow, this is important data. This data is like invaluable. To me, I was like, still, really, I'm not exaggerating. I was so taken aback by this data, I couldn't believe it. I want to see how they're going to analyze this. How they're going to explain it. How could it be? So they gave what I call, unfortunately, I call it stereotypical response to explain it. And this is where I take issue, and I disagree with the way they understood it. They say the following. This is on the bottom of page 6. It is possible, this line I find extremely disturbing, personally. It is possible that yeshiva study in Israel may not be conducive to development of moral and ethical behavior. Oh my God, if that's true, you know, God help us. And then he gives some explanations. And this line also is beyond me. He's quoting from a previous study that had similar conclusions. Everything is viewed through a Jewish prism and judged from a Jewish perspective. That's the problem. I go, first of all, what are you supposed to do in yeshiva? View it from a French perspective? And maybe we should go for, like, ridiculous. Of course it's from a Jewish perspective. And bedafka, because it's a Jewish perspective, therefore we're not going to be ethical. Everyone in this room should be insulted beyond imagination. That's what it means to be a Jew. Dafka, not to be an ethical person. It's crazy to me. And he tries to then, you know, even counter, and he says, look, he says, emphasis on law and ritual means less of an emphasis on centrality. That's the stereotype, right? You know, if you focus on Torah and Talmud Torah and all the beautiful things that we saw mentioned, we just said, if you focus on the beauty of learning and the intellectual honesty of learning, and if you focus on mitzvos, oh, that's at the expense of being a good person, you know, it seems absolutely absurd to me. But he tried to explain it because they said, you know, in yeshiva they learn Musa Svarim, right? You do that also. You know, I'm sure many Musa Svarim. Doesn't that help? So he says, no, that's not even going to help. Why not? Even the study of ethical texts may not be able to bring about change in an environment where, quote, religious Jews in Israel have also redefined the very term morality in particularistic rather than universalistic terms. What does he mean by that? He's saying, the problem is, he's hot, and I don't agree with this. And believe me, I've lived in Israel now really 5 years, and I don't, and all you need is a day to realize the sort of particularistic approach of many people in Israel. That's great. But it's not going to explain this. And what he means by that is that, you know, it's as though what's being drummed into the Talmidim is this idea, you know, you need only to be good to Jews. And the greater world are in a different category, and not necessarily, you don't need to show your ethical, moral behavior towards them. That's the sort of idea. It's a little simplification, but it's basically what they're trying to say. Just, I disagree with it. That's not what's being taught. But aside from that, it doesn't explain this data at all. The data here was, you know, would you cheat on an exam? Would you do things? And it's talking about interactions. Would you be doing chesed to other Jews also? The people that are deficient in their moral behavior, in their ethical behavior, are not, it doesn't mean like, legabe umos ha'olam, are you being ethical? The question in the study, if you look at the study itself, were geared towards what were in their minds, even being ben adam l'chavero to their chaverim Jews. So I don't think it really explains it. So the question really becomes, how do we explain it? How do we explain it? More importantly, what on earth are we going to do about it? So before we get to that, I just want to start off in explaining it by one, as I was reeling from all this conclusive data, or hopefully not absolutely conclusive, but as I was reeling from this data, one final conclusion that was drawn by the author of this study really got to me. And that's on page 7. He gives a concluding paragraph where he sums up his data, and then he says the following. If the present trend of post-high school Israel study continues, it bodes well for the future of modern Orthodox Jewish community. I call it, you got to be kidding me. It bodes abysmally. It's a horror if that's true. So in terms of his final conclusion, I absolutely would totally disagree with it. Now, is he making it up? Is this like an outlier? So not really. Because at least in the 90s, and you got to remember, this is in the 90s when this study was taking place. It was at the end of the 90s representing the people that were in yeshiva. Anyone in the room? In the 90s, right? And he quotes some other people that drew similar conclusions. Rabbi Feldman from Atlanta. In tradition, he made a very similar statement. Apparently this was a very, very serious and has been and continues to be a serious dilemma. He says, while we have created many observant Jews, we have not created many religious Jews. See, I like the way he's phrasing it. First of all, he's pointing out to be a good person is part of being a Jew. You want to be a religious Jew? You have to be a good person. There's no dichotomy there. The noblest internal possibilities, he said first, we're getting people to do chumras and be very good, ben adam l'makom, etc., but the noblest internal possibilities of the Jew, bitachon, awe, humility, courage, loyalty, chesed, ava, are by and large not an integral part of the learning program. As if midos and general spiritual development will somehow take care of themselves. Are we guilty of that? That's the question. Now, maybe in the 90s, but Are we still guilty of it? I don't know. I mean, I do know. I'm going to try to convince you otherwise. I'm also going to really stress, you know, as I was putting this together, my thoughts were for people going into chinuch. Right? I said that I thought it would be important for parents and talmidim to overhear what I would tell people going into chinuch. This is what you need to know. You want to go into chinuch, you want to be a Rebbe, here is your accountability. Here's what you have to know. And this is, as parents and children, talmidim, not children, this is what you should be expecting from your Rebbeim. This and nothing less. So, I said, what accounted for the failure of that generation, or what is accounting for any kind of disconnect here where we're not producing more moral people in the same yeshivas we were producing Talmidei Chachamim and great daveners and people that are really tzanua and all those things. So I started with Rabbi Walter Wurzberger, Zatzal, who was a great rabbi and a philosopher, and he grappled with this issue himself. He pointed to one particular issue that I think is very, very important, and that is the complexity of making moral decisions. And really what he's focusing on is like the following type of dilemma. Let's say you have somebody, and I know there's a tshuva in Sitz Eliezer by Rabbi Oldenburg that looked into this issue. Let's say you're sitting in the base medrash in Talmud Torah, you just heard how absolutely important it is, and who could argue that? And then there's an opportunity that's coinciding with some of your time when you're in the Beis HaMedrash with Chesed. You have an opportunity for Chesed. So how do you navigate? I know the primacy of Talmud Torah, but I have this act of Chesed. So there are some rules, right? Efshal Yidei Acher, right? You are Osek B'mitzvah, Pater B'mitzvah. You're involved in Torah. You're Pater from other mitzvahs if that other mitzvah could be done by someone else. If it's a mitzvah that's beguf that you have to do, then you're not. Okay, so how do you define that exactly? Right, this becomes a major issue for who should go in the army. We're not getting into that, right? And many other things. But the whole issue becomes very complicated, very, very much an ethical decision that's not so pasha, right? And that's just a little tiny example, but it really comes to the fore when many kids come home. How do they navigate their kibud av, their own responsibilities and their other responsibilities at home with their newfound enthusiasm for learning and other asiyos ha-mitzvos? So Rabbi Wurzberger says, inasmuch as a host of cultural historic elements go into the formation of ethical situations, moral judgments cannot be reduced to simple formal rules. You can't just make rules. You need some other way to impart how to make those kind of decisions. It's not going to just be a rule. Tzitz Eliezer's tshuva is incredibly complex. It's many, many pages where he's trying to work this out. That's because it's not pasha. It's not pasha to impart what the right thing to do is. And there's thousands of examples. Another ingredient to understanding the problem on page 9 comes out of the Drashas Aran. And the Drashas Aran, right, by the Rishon, right, very, very highly recommended work, goes through many of the stories in Chumash and gives fantastic Musar. So in one section he's discussing, Avraham sends Eliezer to go get a wife, right? What does he tell him? He says, Lo sikach isha mivnos kna. Right? He tells him, don't, when you're going to get the wife for my special son Yitzchak, don't go and take these wives, these local women from Canaan. Go back to my old homeland, right? So the obvious question is, wait, Mahalalu of the Avodah Zarah, hello, everyone's Avodah Zarah, what's the difference? What's better about those of the Avodah Zarah? That's what the Ran asks. So he answers, he says, nah, not so fast, there's a difference. There's a difference between the Canaan of the Avodah Zarah and the Ovdei Avodah Zarah back in Haran, back where Besuel is. Besuel's a big Avodah Zarah. So what are they like over there? What are they like over there? What's the difference? So he says it over here, in the third paragraph. Me'asher hayu b'nei Kanan metuba'im etchunos raos. The Kanan, they weren't just Oved Avodah Zarah. They had very bad character traits. They were immoral people. They had very bad midos. That's why he chose not to go with them. And he goes on to explain that the Ran, in almost Lamarckian, who's familiar with Lamarck? Genetics, Lamarckian genetics is the idea, right? It's out, right? Darwin knocked it out, but Lamarck understood that acquired characteristics become part of your what you give as an inheritance to your children. You can acquire bad midos, that's what the Ran is saying, and the next generation will pick them up. Now, we don't believe in that, really, right? That's not how genetics works. Nevertheless, what the Ran does get to on the next page is more of it. Ultimately, in summarizing what he says, is that there are certain bad character traits that we're born with, right? Some that are actually, we're genetically predisposed. You could be genetically predisposed towards things like anger and cheapness and various and cruelty. It's actually possible. Or nature, nurture, whatever you say, the early environment was responsible. One way or the other, what the Ran is saying that the problem with the Canaan women is that they might have in that environment ingrained in them things that will be passed on to future generations. Also, things that are ingrained in them that Rav Hirsch, who I think really clarifies the point better on the bottom of page 10, Rav Hirsch asks the same question as the Ran, what's going on, what's the difference between those that are Avodah Zarah and those that are Avodah Zarah? He says, no, there's a difference. To be Oed Avodah Zarah, it's an intellectual problem. An intellectual problem can be handled. You can debate it, you can discuss it, you can convince. But Nidos, Raus, are ingrained in the words that the Rav Hirsch used. The whole nature of a person, the whole depth of his feelings and thoughts are encompassed by those horrible midos. That's something you don't get rid of so easily. So, two reasons so far why we might have this disconnect between Talmud Torah, doing mitzvos, and becoming a good person are the first, the complexity of making moral decisions that Rabbi Wurzburger mentioned. Now, the Drushes Aran and Rav Hirsch are pointing to the fact that midos, you can't argue them out of a person. You can't learn Ali Shor and make a good person. It's not going to do it. You need something else. You need something to get to the deeper core of the problem. So what do we do? So first question is, can you do it? This sounds like a very hard thing to do. If somebody has ingrained their needles and they're so deeply entrenched into their personalities, how do you get rid of them? How do you change them? So the first thing to know is the Rambam very nicely tells us on page 11 over here, it is doable. He says in Hilchos Teshuvah in the seventh parak, absolutely, don't think that the only averus you can do tshuva for are active averus. You do an active sin. He says, no, midos raus, no matter how hard it is, right? And Rav Shmuel Levitz in Sichus Moser says, changing a single midah in a person is like learning all of Shas, right? Very famous, right? That's how hard it is. But it's doable. The Rambam promises it's doable. The question is how. So the Rambam tells us, right, something also alluded to by Rabbi Soloveitchik in the context of learning. But there, I would say it's far less important. To me, learning, the person gets turned on to learning when they experience it and they like it, they're going to get into learning. That's all you need to do. The best thing a Rebbe can do is get out of your way when it comes to Talmud Torah. You let them enjoy it, but you got to facilitate them getting there in the first place. But once, in my experience, a Talmud experiences the Tam Matuka of learning, they don't need you really. They need you maybe for some technical help in terms of aspiring and learning. They go with it. But when it comes to midos, no way. So the Rambam tells you, derech b'yaso shel adam lios nimshach b'deoso b'masav achareya v'chaverav nohe k'minag anshe medina. L'fichach tzarech adam lischaber letzadikim. You have to have role models for midos. That's the only way. Now, this sounds very obvious and simple, but we're going to develop it a little. And hopefully very quickly. Right? Rambam emphasizes a few halachas later, I have to say everything outside, but it's worth looking inside because it's very, very emphatic, strong language that Rambam uses. He says, by the way, what does it mean you need role models to improve a person's midos and change their character? The only way to do it is to hang out with them, not in the base medrash. Not necessarily. You need to hang out with them, the Rambam says, in the dining room, in business, involved in their personal lives. That type of shimush, that involvement, if you can role model under those conditions, that's where midos come out. That's when they see what it means to be honest. That's where they see what it means to be a good person. And that experience alone can be transforming. On page 12, very famous psychologist. Anyone have heard of Albert Bandura? Anyone in psych? You had to have heard of him, right? He is known as, quote, the greatest living psychologist. He's out in Stanford, California. He changed everybody's outlook on learning, on how children in particular learn, but even adults. He said it's all, he caught up to Chazal a couple of centuries later, and he says the same idea. He says it's role modeling is the only way that a person will, or the best way, not the only way, but it's a fundamental way that a person's character can be created. It's by role modeling, and it could be in either direction. It could be bad or good. So obviously you want to do good. He puts a lot of achrayas on parents. They have tremendous achrayas for this, right? But so too, anyone who wants to influence anybody's behavior, it's going to be role modeling. And one point he made that I thought was really brilliant was, over here, he used the word independent of having a preconceived notion that you're doing it. The best role model is not trying to be a role model. There's an amazing article, it's a medical journal article that I just serendipitously came across, where it's discussing, you know, should we have role models in medicine? That was the question. And they unequivocally said, yes, absolutely. It's the only way to make good doctors that are caring, decent people. He says, but not mentors. Role models. There's a very big difference. A mentor is somebody, it's an arranged relationship. A Rebbe's got to be a mentor, right? We arrange for talks. We'll have a schmooze. You know, we'll sit and we'll work out problems, right? That's not what it means to be a role model. A role model, the way they put it here, is serendipitous. No training programs, appointment, certificate. In the words of John Lennon, let's quote John Lennon, being a role model is what happens when you are busy doing other things. That's the key. And why is that so important? Why is it when you're doing other things and you're not actively being a role model, and not sort of with a contrived version of a role model? Because the one thing Talmidim pick up so quickly is sincerity. That's everything. When they know it's real, it moves them, it changes them. So I want to give two quick examples of how this works. And one is a personal example. I had, when I was in college, I remember, and I was in my formative years in college, going through a transition as to me the person. There's one episode, and it could be just a brief encounter when it's a good, sincere role model. It's a brief encounter that does it. I was walking in the street. I had been playing basketball at like 1 a.m., right? Which was a good thing to do. And there we were. We were in this very bad neighborhood. Anyone's familiar with it? About 120th at Broadway. And my friend and I are walking back from the gym. And it's really literally the middle of the night, and we pass this little old lady. Now, intellectually, the thought occurred to me, hey, that's crazy. What's she doing here at 1 a.m. in the middle of this horrible neighborhood? But I walked by. My friend, and I'll never, ever, ever stop thanking him for this, stopped, turned around, went to the lady and said, could we escort you home? That moment of sincere, unbelievable expression of midos tovos had an impact on me that sent me off to Israel. I'll put it in that way. It changed me as a person. It was so dramatic to me. Just that little tiny episode. To give another example, now more at home in yeshiva, like we were emphasizing in the Rambam before, these episodes need to occur outside of the Beis Medrash. A lot can happen in the Beis Medrash as well. There's a great story of Nassim Finkel, Nassim Svi. It's a tzal. Tremendous, tremendous person. I recommend reading his biography. In it, there's this incredible story. There was this chavrusa, boy from Great Britain, was learning with this other guy, and he said to him, you know, I don't feel so well, I need to go out to the men's room. He goes out to the men's room and never comes back. So the chavrusa, you know, bitul zman, I'm not going out to check on him. He keeps learning, right? The next morning, this is a true story, right? They found him in the bathroom. Unfortunately, he was nifty. He was dead. The yeshiva was completely rocked. Unbelievable. And everyone didn't know what to say, what to do. But Nassim Tzvi, before he was Rosh Hashiva, he was just one of the Rosh Hashiva, said, you know, he never spoke. He only started speaking when he became Rosh Hashiva, but then he rarely did. He was very quiet. He was known as very quiet as everybody, anyone knows him or ever heard him. Extremely quiet, unassuming person. He called an entire yeshiva together, we need to speak. And you're talking about Demir, we're talking about thousands of guys. It's pretty big. What did he say? He quotes Gemara in Shabbos. Gemara in Shabbos says, "Im echa mina achim, if one of the brothers dies, all the achim have to be worried. If one of the chabura dies, all the people in the chabura have to be worried." He says, "I'm looking at all of you, and all of you are like, I didn't really know this guy. You know, what do I have to do? He's not part of my chabura. What do I have to do with him? I, you know, I'm busy learning. I never got to meet this guy." So Rav Nassim Tzvi, in an incredibly impassioned expression, and here's where the godless of the role model came, he said, everyone is somebody who needs to be doeg. Everybody should be afraid. Why? Everybody should be worried. Why? Because if you could be all this far into yeshiva, and you were so focused on your learning and your personal spiritual development, but never went over to this guy, didn't know who he was, and didn't befriend him, and didn't feel that it was important to get to know him, you better worry. That's Pshat in the Gemara. And what was amazing, aside from the content, which is incredibly powerful, to see Rav Nassim Tzvi get up there in the Beis Medrash, where, you know, he was one of the biggest masmidim ever, and he totally emphasized the importance of asmada. He got up and he said, you know, wake up! You want to be a good Jew? This is what you need to do fundamentally. This comes way ahead. And we're really getting late, so I just want to finish up by quoting one thing from the Rambam, basically, in summing it all up. There is a frightening disconnect that apparently the data seems to express, certainly in the 90s and possibly in our time. It has to do with that we're making, a Rebbe's responsibility is to make Talmidei Chachamim, it's to make people that are very committed to mitzvahs, to make people that are handling all the issues out there. But fundamentally, it's to make good people. And the way to do it, the way, what you must expect from your Rebbe, aside from aspiring and giving all the content, is that they should be available. In the words of the Rambam, he's quoting the Gemara in Chagiga, he says, Harav she'en aholech b'derech tova, afal pi shechacham gadol hu, v'kol ha'am tzrichim lo, ein mislam de mimeno. I don't care what a great Talmud Chacham he is, don't go near him, if he's not a good person. Ad shuvu lemutav, she'en amar kisif se'kon, yishmir das v'torah, yivakshu mipiu, ki malach Hashem tzvakosu. Amru Chachamim, im harav dome lemalach Hashem, tzvakos, torah yivakshu mipiu. Imlav al yivakshu torah mipiu. Bottom line is, what Rebbe needs to be is a malach. He needs to be a malach in the most sincere way. Okay, it's a tough job description, what can I say? But, in truth, if somebody really is going to take upon themselves this achrayus, to be the one who's going to be influencing others, this is what they need to be doing. They need to be expressing this type of personage so that others can be taking off from that influence and become better people. Thank you very much. Thank you.